dear friends.
Thank you very much, Tim Lewis. Thank you very much, Bill. I want to, first of all, thank you very much for your expressions of friendship towards Cuba, a friendship that is confirmed by your presence here tonight. In Cuba, we are baseball players, and we understand the meaning of facing the Americans in a sports event. And therefore, your presence here tonight implies an extra value for Cuba, because we know that we are competing with the hockey game between Calgary and Tampa. As Bill mentioned, and as Tim Lewis mentioned, in a few weeks, I will be departing Canada after 5 years of diplomatic tour in this country. And I want to tell you that if you're going to be entrusted with the responsibility of representing Cuba, and you're going to do so feeling pride like I do for representing my country and what my country stands for, I want to tell you that it is a great privilege to do so in Canada, because of the values one finds and the friends that one can find here in Canada. Therefore, I believe that as a representative of Cuba, I've been privileged in the past 5 years to serve my country here in Canada. And in this responsibility, I've had the opportunity during these 5 years to visit Vancouver several times and to assess and to confirm the level of friendship, the level of solidarity, and the level of sympathy that the people of this part of Canada have towards my country, and that my country feels thankful for, and I will certainly convey to my country your sentiments of friendship and expressions like the one you're presenting here tonight. The topic that I will be talking about, as was announced, are the recent measures by the U.S. government to strengthen the policy of aggression against Cuba. In doing so, we need to put them in context. And both Bill and Tim have talked about the world in which we live and the absurdity of many of the realities we face in today's world. I like normally to use as a reference basically my region, Latin America and the Caribbean, even though it is true that all over the world today, in most parts, we find that there's a lack of hope and that there's a lack of foreseeable solutions to the many problems faced by hundreds of millions of individuals and thousands of communities. Lack of solutions for increasing disparities. Lack of solutions for the retraction or the crumbling of social services in most countries around the world. A lack of solution for the greater concentration of wealth and the greater expansion of poverty and deprivation in most parts of the world, and a lack of solution for the environmental destruction of the sources that we depend today and we will depend in the future to survive as human beings. This is a result of corrupt and failed economic policies that combine both structural underdevelopment with dogmatic neoliberal approaches and concepts that have been imposed mainly from Washington in the past 20, 25 years. They're also the result of an unjust economic order, international economic order, that condemns most developing countries to permanent or perpetual underdevelopment. And of course, as a result of an ideological doctrine, a dogmatic ideological doctrine based on greed, on selfishness, and the survival of the few. In Cuba, for the past 45 years, we have felt that there's a different way. And we have stubbornly defended our right to try a different way. In doing so, we have faced challenges and obstacles and a level of aggressiveness that few countries, if any, have been able or have been forced to face for such a prolonged period and on such unequal terms. This new approach, this different way of doing things, we call it socialism. And we strongly believe that it is our right to build our society and to provide a future for our people based on socialism, if that is a way that we're going to find solutions to the many problems that as a nation we face and that the country and that the world face today. For doing so, for pursuing that model, and for defending the right to pursue that model, we are being punished, and we have been punished for the past 45 years. The aggression of the United States against Cuba, as all of you know, is not new. It has a long history. And it has included a cocktail of all types of aggression. It has included mercenary military aggression. It has included the threat of nuclear annihilation of our country and of our people. It has included terrorism, biological warfare, assassination attempts, explosions, the killing of children, economic damage and sabotage of many sources, attack on diplomatic missions abroad, and of course, a very strong economic warfare, what we call the economic blockade. And it has also included a very strong, a very well-financed, and a very well-organized war of propaganda and slander against Cuba, against the Cuban Revolution, against socialism, and against the values that our country tries to defend. This aggression has also included, for a long period, different types of plans, of blueprints, and of schemes of what should be Cuba in the future, of which should be the Cuba different from the revolution that we have been building for the past few years. All have failed, all have caused damage, but none yet, none of the aggressions, none of the acts of aggression, none of the plans or schemes have been able to transform the main nature of the Cuban Revolution, nor the determination of the people of Cuba to build this new society. So what is new of the measures recently announced by the President of the United States on May 6? What he announced was a result or the report of a committee and the recommendations of a committee that he recommended to be, that he himself commended to build a blueprint of what would be the Cuba of the future and which is the way to provoke a transition in Cuba. What's new about this is basically two elements that is important for us to understand. One is the circumstances in which these new measures are being announced, which is the electoral year in the United States. Many who followed the elections of the year 2000 or have followed U.S. elections know the importance of the state of Florida in a federal election in the United States. It is the fourth voting state in terms of votes count in the presidential election. And it's a state that cannot be easily defined if it goes to the Democrats or it goes to the Republicans. And therefore, both parties, the Republicans and the Democrats, and both candidates dedicate time, effort, and energy to try to obtain the votes of every single sector of the state of Florida. And everybody knows that there is an important presence of Cuban Americans living in the state of Florida. a sector of which has become economically powerful and has become politically powerful. And this sector, the one that has become economically powerful and politically powerful, is the one that represents the inheritance of the Batista regime in Cuba, the inheritance of the Cuba that we abolished with the revolution, the inheritance of the unfair, unjust, and corrupt system that used to exist in Cuba. This is the extreme right, what we typically call in Cuba, the Cuban-American mafia. And they have had, for the past years and continue to have today, a great influence in both state and federal politics in the United States. And it is in this context of the elections that the United States approves these measures. One could simply say, then, on this basis, that these are measures that should not be looked at seriously because they're only an electoral maneuver. But the problem is that if it were an electoral maneuver, it is one that is trying to cater to people that have a very aggressive attitude towards Cuba, that is trying to satisfy the demands of people that have openly advocated for a full military aggression against Cuba, people that have openly advocated for the United States to act against Cuba as it did against Iraq. And this is, in today's world, a very dangerous reality. And the other reason of why this moment is important, and the other element that is new in the announcement of these measures, is that it is done at a moment when the United States is proclaiming and practicing a new military doctrine, the military doctrine of the right to use preventive action, or what they call preemptive action, to take full military aggression against a sovereign nation on the basis of excuses or pretexts constructed by the United States or fabricated by the United States, regardless of the opinion of the international community, regardless of the position of the United Nations, and regardless of the facts. It's simply if they build the pretext, they feel they are ready and that they have the capability to go and act aggressively against a sovereign nation.